You're listening to the first ever episode of The Ad Brief, the weekly Adland podcast, and it probably will sound like the first episode. Your hosts are Osk Wapping and me, Noah Rosenberg. She and I have been pen pals since the 90s, talking about everything advertising related, and now we're just doing it out loud. So please enjoy this inaugural, scrappy first episode of The Ad Brief.
I love that that link you sent about the case study, the fake one.
Yeah, that's brilliant. The zoo case study is mocking every case study ever made. It's so funny. Oh, I love that thing.
It's got that, the perfect breathless foreign announcer.
Yeah. And it's like, and it's stepping up on every bingo case study word as well. You know, we did this. We were viral. We were giving out stuff in the subway. You know, we had a zoo. Everybody could Facebook it. You know, you could Foursquare it. You could Gowalla it. You could do all this stuff. And it just got worse and worse. And oh man, that's so hilarious because I feel like case studies have become viral films in themselves now. It's like the case study is the ad.
No, I think that's a good point. And you know, we were talking about Snapchat earlier, and somebody had done a lingerie ad. And they called it an ad, but the way it worked was that only the pictures could only be sent to people that they were friends with on Snapchat. So they sent it to the friends of the lingerie model herself. So it was basically the entire audience of this campaign was just people that already knew the model and knew that she worked for the lingerie company. So if you wanted to reach 12 people, Snapchat could do it. But the actual campaign, I think, was the case study. The article talking about it. Now I've heard about it. Now I've heard about the lingerie company. So the use of Snapchat wasn't the actual medium. It was the conversation around it became the ad. Same with like these case studies, like you're saying, the case study is the ad a lot of the time.
Yeah. And you've seen that before too, because I mean, it used to be that, you know, maybe they had 5 stickers placed on round objects in the city of Amsterdam to advertise a bowling ball or you know, something like that. And it's like, you know, nobody actually saw these 5 stickers, but everybody saw the articles with the photographs and they were written up in Adweek and whatever. So it's just an extension of that, I think, that it's just like now we're better at using our iMovie editing programs and we're going to make sure that our idea is up on YouTube within 5 minutes and being seen by, you know, 200,000 people in Latvia who aren't going to buy our product.
Yeah, but they're going to hire that agency, hopefully, right?
Yeah, maybe.
A new business.
I mean, I think there's good ways and bad ways of doing it. I'm sorry, I have a phone that makes a lot of noise. It's like, did you see the red light district stop traffic stunt?
Tell me about it.
Well, it was. I've lived in the red light district in Amsterdam for like 3 years, but you know, I only hoard myself out to advertising. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, can you live there or do you have to live and work?
Yeah, no, you can live there. And I live, you know, not very far from where the windows were. So I had to pass this every day. So when I saw the stunt, it was an entire building of, you know, women in lingerie in the red windows. And then they started a synchronized dance to some, like, sort of, I don't know, dubstepy type music.
It's a flash mob, basically.
Flash mob type idea. And I thought if this was done in the red light district, that's fucking amazing. That's really awesome because it ended with like this sign that said thousands of women are lured to these areas with the promise of a dance job, you know, and now they're here in the windows. And I mean, if you're showing this to the people who are actually using the women, then that would be a really fantastic idea. However, this was shot far away from the red light district. And then I'm not so keen on it anymore because then it becomes an excellent case study film that wasn't actually targeting the people who should be targeted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where my disappointment lies. I mean, I still think it's a fabulous idea, but if it was shown to the people, the punters who actually go to the women in the red light district, then that's a good idea. If it's just to impress me, an advertising person halfway across the world, then I'm not so cool with it.
Yeah, which I think is the whole downside of a case study video in general is a lot of time they're for ads that we've never seen or, you know, they kind of, for me, feel similar to, you know, you just get this feeling that there's something wrong as you watch them, that you're being used in a way. Almost, you know, it's the same feeling I get when I see those shows of like kid pageants. And you feel like there's somebody out there who really thinks that it's okay to show kids in this way, even if only for that hour. But they dream of a world where everybody wants kids to look like that all the time.
Yeah.
In the same way with like these videos, it seems like it's creepiness because all the case study videos live in this land where advertising really was the key. It's the advertising that really changed everything, and the whole world changed around it, and people stopped going to zoos and they just started watching the video on their phone, like in that fake one. It's kind of like this Wizard of Oz sort of world where for that one second, the ad people get to be the wizard.
Yeah. And it's all just smoke and mirrors, and it really didn't happen. And I love the way how they fake numbers in all of these case studies too. There's a lot of just, you know, inflated stuff, and it's kind of obvious after a while. But it also gets a bit weird when you have award winners that weren't actually created by the advertising agency, but it was created by the client. And then the advertising agency does an amazing case study about what the client is doing, and boom, they walk home with a Cannes Lion.
Yeah.
But I probably should mention exactly which one that is because they'd get mad at me. But
I think it's that could be fair game. I mean, it's worth calling out, right, if we want to talk about it. But that brings up a whole separate issue of like, what does it matter if the client asks for it first, or, you know, does the agency have to be the inspiration behind everything?
Yeah, that's a good point. It doesn't have to be that way. I mean, you should really, I still believe in the old school where agencies and clients were partners with the same goal. You know, we have to sell more of the client's stuff, basically. So they're partners. They're like married.
Yeah.
You know? So, and then it doesn't really matter who comes up with the stuff, as long as, you know, the agency's role is to make sure that it works out excellently and perfectly, you know?
Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, when we're even talking about these case study videos, you got to remember what the whole point of awards, I think, overall, why the agencies want them is so that somebody else hires them to do that thing. And so I guess they're saying maybe, you know, they should be more on the level and say, hey, this client's brought us this great idea and we turned it into a thing that was worthy of a Cannes Lion. Maybe without us, it wouldn't have gotten there.
Yeah, maybe. Exactly.
And hey, somebody else should come and ask us to do it next time.
Yeah, but dude, that's like asking an agency to be humble. that's never going to happen.
It can't be done, right?
No, it can't be. they're the most amazing thing ever, you know, since sliced bread. They're so cool.
There's something interesting too about this industry in particular, which is, you know, we're talking about these case studies that people will even do fake ones and it doesn't matter. Nobody cares really if it was true or not, as long as you got that attention or you got that.
Oh, yeah. Are you thinking about there was a sign that was placed at the lowest part of the ocean or something?
What was that one?
It was like some sort of, there was an advertising sign that was placed at the lowest part of the ocean.
They claimed it was down in some trench.
Yeah, they claimed it was down in some trench at the lowest part of the ocean, which is, you know, was physically impossible because if it would go down to the lowest part of the ocean, it would be crushed. Yeah. But whatever, you know, I'm sorry I paid attention in school. I shouldn't have done that. I should have grown up an idiot. But lots of people fell for it, and they thought it was great. And so the hype surrounding this, you know, got a lot of attention. But, of course, there is no sign at the bottom of the ocean, and anybody who called it out was kind of sneered at. And I thought that was a bit annoying because I'm fine with it being a fake story, sort of like the spaghetti that grew on trees, April Fool's jokes, but just, like, not allowing people to call it out was kind of stupid.
Well, I imagine, you know, this year we're going to see the Red Bull helium balloon, sky jump, Felix Baumgartner thing in a lot of award shows because it did get a lot of attention to brands. But it's kind of the same way. Like, do we know if that really happened or not? And does it matter?
Yeah, well, that did happen. I mean, they did call in Kithinger and they planned it for years and he couldn't do the jump before.
Yeah.
Because I followed that really closely because I am a fan of Kithinger's really scary jump. And the fact that he came out of retirement to help and give, like, advice on how to do it, like, only one man's done this before. It's me with the steel balls over here.
No, it was definitely an event. You know, we watched it at home, and even though they had to postpone it and put it on the weekend, it still seemed successful for them. But at the same time, like, incredibly wasteful. There's like a huge helium shortage, you know, going on, and
right,
and then
exactly.
They have this giant balloon for what? But
yeah, I keep my daughter hasn't thrown away her birthday balloon yet because I told her that, you know, when you're 27 or something, there's not going to be birthday balloons anymore. She's completely refusing to throw away her birthday balloon now.
Hang on to it and save it.
Yeah.
So that kind of takes us through case studies, Ask. Yeah. Oh, so do you want to talk about the, you know, we were talking about Snapchat before. You want to talk about that 16 handles?
Yeah, that was interesting, wasn't it? Did you see that comment that he said?
I'm going to bring it up and see if we can read it on here. But you want to tell, what was the basic thing? So they were trying to use Snapchat to give away coupons. Is it, are they using it just because it's kind of been in the news lately and they know that they can get press on it? Or do they feel like...
You know, yeah, you know, I feel like that's also partly why people do that. Like when they jump onto Instagram or Snapchat or, you know, name insert next app here. It's because they can get into press because they get to use a buzzword.
Yeah,
you know, they're Pinteresting a page full of their ads or something. Yay, we get the press release. It's just like when it's useless and it's called out, like the 16 candles. Kid Sleepy called that out on Adland, and he says, "Well, you go to you follow 16 handles on Snapchat, and then you go to a 16 handles location, and then you take a photo of you tasting a sample of their fro, and then you send a photo, and then they would send you a coupon, and after that you make your selection, and you can hurry up and use that coupon for whatever random amount of savings off before it disappears." And then he just starts laughing, and he's like, "You lost me on step 14, because seriously, that sounds stupidly complicated.
Right.
So they're only on their, it is, you know, let's admit it, it's a sexting app. It's not a place for advertisement. It's just, it seems so wrong to do this. And he says, the CEO comes in and he explains that you don't have only 10 seconds to redeem the coupon. It's 10 seconds from when the customer activates it. And that just makes it even more complicated. We're activating right. coupons now.
Right.
You know.
And that you can click on it and lose it. That it's sort of like this Mission Impossible. This coupon will expire in 10 seconds. Yeah, they don't give any info on how many redemptions. We don't know how did Kid Sleepy even find out about this to post it.
Oh, we get press releases. He's so happy to press release stuff.
Yeah, they're so happy that they came up with the idea, even though nobody's redeemed it.
Yeah, and people would press release, you know, practically anything. And like this year, infographics is everybody's favorite thing. So I get like 4 or 5 infographics a day, and I'm not posting any single one of them because it's like, just stop sending us infographics. We don't want to link back to you. We don't care. We don't. Just don't. It's not, you know, I can't write a news article around your infographic.
I think that's the problem, is they just want the story, but they don't want to have room for any commentary because it's kind of a hollow story.
Yeah, no, infographics is like the current favorite way to get a link back. So if you start a website, you make a few infographics and you send that out to lots of other websites and then you get link backs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the current way of begging for link backs, and I'm just like, not falling for it, sorry.
Is the pitch usually, hey, this is something that your readers would want you to share?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, no, they don't. My readers don't care about infographics. We don't care.
No, I think the best thing that you have is, you know, getting the quote right from the guy, which is the most interesting part. And I hope everybody wants to check out that story, because it looks like Adam Britton from 16 Handles went on and commented about it, which is a lot more interesting than some infographic passed around. Yeah.
Exactly. No, we'd much prefer to talk about, I mean, love it or hate it, anything new that's being done in advertising than to show an infographic about how many cats buy cat food. I don't care. I really don't. And I haven't seen an infographic yet. Maybe that should be a challenge. Somebody should send us an infographic that I would actually care about.
How many people send infographics to Adline? That'll be the infographic. And how many get posted?
How many get posted? One file posted, none.
You know, it is an interesting topic for agencies. I think, you know, just in a bigger picture, we've been spending a lot of time figuring out how to kind of, how can an agency get known without stooping to these kind of tactics? I don't know if you've seen any examples, but for us, you know, really as an agency, there is no sort of go-to-market strategy. We don't really have a way of telling clients, you know, you need something right now. We have to wait for them to kind of find the need first and start their search and then be the most, you know, the prettiest flower.
Yeah, that's actually a difficult thing, because a lot of agencies are terrible at, you know, promoting themselves. It's like, we can't do it.
Yeah, the cobbler's child syndrome. Well, we sat down and we were like, okay, well, if we're going to do this for ourselves, we're going to do, let's do it how we would do any ad. And let's try and divorce ourselves from being too close to it. Cause that's always the problem is you can't kind of promote yourself. And, it makes you want to slit your wrists when you see what an agency really does. I'm like, I don't want to hear about this. You know, you look at five or six agencies that you really, are impressed with, you know, or really admire, and their way of talking about themselves is just vacuous as well. Yeah. You know, and it's like for an industry that's professional, that professes to help people communicate, we have a really hard time doing it about ourselves.
Yeah. And it's also like, it's very lofty. It's, you often have a paragraph about an agency, which is just stringing together so many buzzwords. It gives you sort of like an insulin shock reading it because it's just all kinds of wrong. And half of those words don't mean anything when they're put together either. So it's just why are agencies doing that?
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's also the same problem has existed with the agency websites for a really long time. Like, it was difficult finding agency websites where you could actually find the information that you're looking for. Like, if you Google agency names, you're never going to find the phone number immediately below it like you do with any other thing that you Google the name of.
Yeah.
You know, you Google Sears and ooh, you have a 1-800 number. you Google, you know, world's most famous ad agency, you get nothing, you know, because the site's like really complicated and not up to standard. And I think that's really funny.
So you're mostly looking for a phone number?
Yeah, well, because, you know, I'll get a press release from somebody who claims to be working at X and it looks like it's fake and I need to call somebody and check that it's real.
Oh, okay.
And I need the phone number.
Yeah, which I imagine is hidden because people are trying to keep away job seekers, recent college grads that are knocking on their door too much or something. I don't know. That's probably 90% of our website traffic, right, is people looking at the job section.
That's funny, actually, because like I started an agency like for a brief nanosecond in Amsterdam, and we had something appear in Lurcher's archive, and immediately there were three or four emails from people who wanted to work for us, and it was like, yeah, that's actually just me and my partner freelancing, so not going to be happening.
Yeah, but no, that's definitely people are trying to kind of draft your fame that you've earned there on archive. You know, they feel like that's their goal to be in there too, and they want to be a part of it. So, and a lot of people I've known, that's how they define if a shop is good or not. You know, have I seen them in CA or have I seen them in archive?
Yeah, exactly.
Which isn't really, I don't know. It's not a measure of if you're going to like working there, that's for sure. And it's not a measure if they're any good for their clients.
No.
So let's see what else we got here.
Yeah, what else were we going to say?
You got a link here about, that agency resolutions Tumblr, which I think is a good segue from where we are, you know, what we're talking about now.
Yes.
What I kind of like about that one is it does seem kind of public that people are just contributing to it variously, not just one voice, but, you know.
Yeah, somebody set up that Tumblr receive email quite easily there.
Yeah. But, you know, I think there are some pretty deep truths in here. Some of them are just, you know, kind of the same stuff we've been seeing all over. But every time I look at it, I'm like, this is really kind of the sign of a pretty insecure industry in general, the things that people want to change every year. This year, I'll not swear every minute of every fucking day. The fucking killing it suit. This year, I will not stifle the urge to laugh out loud whenever anyone refers to themselves as a panelist or a panelist as a guru or ninja, the social media guru. I just saw a statistic. There are 160,000 people who have their Twitter profile saying that they're gurus of social media.
There's too many gurus on social media.
The self-appointed gurus.
Yeah. This year, I will not hire suits on shagability over ability. Maybe only after the ECD does the same. Whoa.
I'll not feel threatened by cheaper staff with better ideas. Is that posted by the cheaper staff?
I guess so. And this year, I will not let the suits and copywriters laugh at me for not knowing how to use the basics of PowerPoint. Art director. How could you be an art director and not know how to use the basics of PowerPoint?
How could you be an art director and be asked to use PowerPoint? I think it's a better question.
Well, that's usually because I have to make the layouts for the PowerPoint that the client will later use.
Yeah.
you know, the background stuff so that their PowerPoints are still branded like their stuff. And it's like, oh, dear God, now I have to learn PowerPoint. I hate you so much.
Or even for the pitch deck to the client, you know, where we're trying to put our best work in there and design it so it looks cool. But then why are you using PowerPoint?
Yeah, no, I don't, but the clients do.
Yeah, and they have the reader. They know how to view it.
Yeah, exactly.
Something that speaking of PowerPoints, that kind of brought up an interesting thing is we've been getting interested in this win without pitching. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Win without pitching. So it's a thing for agencies. This guy's got a book and he goes around doing consulting and speaking. And he has a really interesting point, which is that the majority of people who go into this business, and for 90% of the people who become in charge of agencies, are addicted to the big reveal. That we will go out of our way to create tons and tons of work and create these really huge pitch decks and PowerPoint decks. And I'm sure you've been involved in these crazy things where, you know, it's like you're working every hour of the weekend to make this perfect 90,000 page deck, thinking that, God, if there's one thing we don't put in there, we're not going to get the work. And you just overload it because you're going for that moment where you want the big ta-da in the reveal. You want the client to be so overwhelmed. But what you're selling them on is a relationship.
Yeah,
and you're selling them on the give and take, and that's really what we want to be doing. And so, you know, we're talking about how case studies are kind of phony. The entire relationship with the client starts out phony.
Yeah,
because we're trying to kind of sell them on here's what we would do if we were alone. So don't you want to partner with us?
Yeah, you know, it's a good point that you're saying that that starts the relationship off in the wrong way because. You know, the client might be getting addicted to that big reveal too. So every time they're coming in for a new thing, they're expecting this. And that's why you're constantly booked the weekends to do another gazillion deck, you know. Yeah. And when the client doesn't like that deck, you have to do it again next weekend. And then you have like entire creative departments leaving because they haven't seen their kids for 2 years. So that's just dumb. You're starting the relationship in the wrong way. The relationship should be like a proper relationship, you know? You have to know what the client wants, and you're going to give it to them. But, you know, I'm sure there has to be a wooing period for any new relationship. But it seems that in advertising, there's a lot of free pitching going on and a lot of time spent that will never get money in return when you're trying to woo a client.
But could you imagine if you had that deck, that 90-page deck, and what your suggestion to the client was is that they should talk to their customers with a 90-page PowerPoint deck? That's the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah.
And yet
you guys spend all your weekends on trying to sell that 10-cent thing.
But you know that's kind of what we end up with is we never make ads, you know, like that. If a client came to us and said, we want to make a PowerPoint deck and we want to have these 90 things, every creative would revolt, right? We'd say, no, you know, if I throw 5 golf balls at you, you're only going to catch one of them and the rest will hurt, right? Or whatever, however that conversation always goes, that you don't want to have too many things in an ad. We're always about simplify. But then when we go to talk about ourselves in this pitch deck, we put every freaking thing we could ever think of. We become the client in a way.
Yeah, and it's the same with the websites. It's like you're all things to all people on the websites. We're a creative 360 product agency doing this and that and apps and space rockets and you know, we're a creative amoeba and we can do everything. And it's like, dear God, you're probably better at one of the things.
Right.
You know?
But you're afraid to say that one thing because you might not get work in the 10 others.
Yeah, it's because you're typecast. But, I mean, I think that goes back to, like, everybody is typecast in everything. Like, there was this – I just spoke to a friend of mine who shared a flight back from Pittsburgh next to a makeup artist who used to work on the Mad Men. And he did the hair of the Mad Men, like, first season or something. And, you know, as somebody who admires Christina Hendricks' red hair in the Mad Men thing, I'm just like, wow, her hairstyles are great. He actually quit because or else he would be typecast as a period hair doer.
You'd only get to do beehives.
Yeah, and he's like, no, I'm gonna quit this. I know Mad Men's a great job, you know, the art direction is superb, everything is great, you know, the costume designer and everybody, there's great attention to detail in this show and it's excellent on my resume. So since it is excellent on my resume, I'm gonna take another job. So he worked on The Hobbit. So he moved to a completely different
period.
Completely different period. But he is typecast as the period piece guy now. And it's funny because he's a hairdresser.
Well, like, yeah, he's either typecast or anytime anybody needs an old style haircut, he gets the call, which isn't a bad place to be. You know, now somebody knows when to use him.
Yeah.
And they know exactly, like, when they need that 50s hairstyle, he'll get the call.
Yeah, or the mystery fantasy Gandalf hair.
Yeah. Which there's way too much of, unfortunately. But, you know, here where our shop is here in St. Louis, we're on a street with 20 other agencies.
And okay, do you ever have agency street parties? Because that sounds like something you should do.
Yeah, we did, actually. Our holiday party, we opened our doors, and there's another shop, you know, across the hall from us. And people were going back and forth between the two. It was awesome.
That's cool.
And they're even, you know, they're a somewhat digital shop. But, you know, my feeling is, like you said about casting, I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing. Like, the kid who played Harry Potter couldn't have played Ron. You know, mm-hmm. He just would have been completely wrong for it. And I feel like it's not, you know, we each have our own role to find. And so even though we're all here together, it's not like somebody could come and shop all the agencies.
No.
You know, and it forces us to be kind of a little bit different from each other. It's a really good environment. You know, there is something about the business I know we've talked about a little bit in the past, too, is that there aren't a lot of environments where you get to share. There aren't a lot of chances where we can comfortably talk about how to get better at what we do.
Yeah, that's true. And there's also a problem. I think we talked about this too before, that now that you have, like, large clients have their work spread out on several different agencies, it gets really confusing what the client is actually saying. So, like, say, hypothetically, we have some big donut chain. Try not to mention anybody's name. And they have, you know, one digital shop, and they work with another social media shop, and they work with, you know, somebody else for the web, and they work with somebody else for their TV, and somebody else for their radio. It starts getting really confusing because all of these shops will say, we can do all of these things.
Right.
And none of them are actually running on the same proposition anymore because the client has to, like, sort of give everybody a little piece of something and not, like, coming out with the same message. It doesn't become a true 360 message just because you have, like, 360 agencies.
Yeah.
that's not how it works.
Well, the interesting thing, you know, that each agency is just going to vie to take control of the messaging because they want to be the one that's got
the autonomy there. Happens. Yeah, so they're infighting and they're cannibalizing on each other, and this is going to be bad for the client overall. So the question is, should the clients go to one large giant agency, you know, like the Publicis of the worlds or something like that, or should there be an umbrella agency that takes care of all the other agencies so that we don't have infighting going on?
And it's their job to kind of corral everybody.
Yeah, it's like sort of a diplomatic agency.
Well, you know, the way it had been broken up, and I don't know how much this still exists or if it in this particular case, but there was always the sort of above the line and below the line, that there was a certain level of anointed, you know, kind of like Mount Olympus demigods that could define what a brand is and tell a brand story. And generally that was TV.
Yeah.
It generally was split up by media. So the TV group did this, and then maybe you had maybe a lead brand agency do your brand website, but then you still had another agency do promotions. At the shop I was before here, we worked on a big ice cream brand. But it was a shared account with an above the line agency that everybody kind of knows the name of. There was a lot of, you know, fighting. It was a huge victory for us anytime we felt like it was our idea that got used, kind of crossing that line in the mind of the client and in the mind of the consumer, you know, you're vying for all of it. But what you're suggesting maybe is that umbrella agency kind of came in there from the beginning and said, we can run it. We can manage all these other people.
Yeah. We'll be the suits, you know, we'll do the running around and making sure that everybody's on the same message. And then all the 360 other agencies get to do what they do best.
Would that main agency even hire the other, bring them in?
I suppose that would be a good idea. But I'm also thinking, I mean, it's because, like before, like you were saying, there were demigods up there. It was always the idea that won out in the beginning. So sometimes it would be that, like, the big agency would have the best creatives that came up with the best idea. And then at other times it wasn't. So what's happening now is that there's so many of them that are sharing the same account. Instead of it being, like, three, it's 15. And that's when I think this relationship is just bound to cause turmoil constantly.
Mm-hmm. And the weight of TV isn't what it used to be in the sense where it would lead your campaign. Probably more people are going to see your web promotion than they're going to see your 30-second spot.
Which is probably what all digital agencies are using as an argument right now. Going, you should follow our thing. Our thing's the best. Everybody watches videos on the web.
Have you seen a trend?
Everybody watches those. Yeah, everybody watches those 7-minute like YouTube ads. Always.
Right. Have you seen a trend of these demigods moving to digital shops?
No, they don't move to digital shops. They move to tech.
Like Ian Tate moving to Google?
Yeah, I think. Well, Ian Tate actually came. Didn't he come from digital to begin with? I mean, I can't remember. But yeah, it seems to me that the demigods, or at least the ones that I follow more closely, are walking straight away from advertising and straight into either starting up their own things or getting nabbed up by tech.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that also means demigods that come from really big, well-known digital agencies.
So do you have any other examples of people getting nabbed up by tech?
Well, no, Ian Tate is probably the most famous example. The others are in the middle of doing startups, and they're famous names, but since like they're in the middle of doing startups, it's probably not wise mentioning them until they've actually done it.
Yeah. Well, no, they want it. They need as much attention as they can get. They want you to talk about it.
Maybe. Well, you have like people like Cindy Gallup, too, who started her thing, which is, you know, she had to like hustle around for VC funding for her Make Love That Porn stuff. And she got it now. So she's started something.
Hmm.
And that's walking out from BBH.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, you know, when I was at Ogilvy a couple years ago, maybe 5 years ago, one of the head guys left to run the Google Digital Lab.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy Berndt, I think it was. And, you know, that was a big deal at the time for somebody to kind of cross over to the client side. And I think, I don't know if it's been winning awards, but I would say this stuff that Google's been doing for Chrome is some of the most interesting work being done anywhere.
Yeah. No, but that's probably why they're walking over. It's like, you know, at some point it's not the awards anymore. The awards are just a way to get a higher salary and maybe a title at another agency, which you're still going to hate because it's the same thing as before. You know, so I think that's why these people, they've wised up to that. And when they get offered, you know, here, you get to do all those crazy ideas that you want to do without somebody saying that's impossible or we don't have the technology to it. For it, that's when they cross over. I mean, the other dreamers, they're going to start their own agencies.
So like the Droga 5 kind of thing?
Yeah.
Which is really, I think, a digital agency at this point, even though maybe they supplement stuff with some video.
You know, it seems to me that everything is pretty much digital now. I mean, that's where people are, that's where the consumer is. We're in our phones and on the web and in our apps. So I hate to be that guy, but, you know, how often... I photographed a poster today, but, you know, I'm sick and twisted, so...
Yeah, we're not the demographic.
I'm so not the demographic.
You're an
outlier.
And
the only reason I photographed it was because it looked like a Blue Note album, and I was like, this art director is ripping somebody else off.
It was really Reed Miles should get the recognition for the poster.
Yeah.
So I know you're kind of privy to some Super Bowl stuff before it hits, and you don't have to talk too much about if it's embargoed or what. But have you seen a lot of the campaigns that you're getting sent have digital tie or have a connection to work other than the spot?
There's going to be. I thought it was bad last year, but there's going to be a ridiculous amount of hashtag words this year. It's really not funny at all. It's basically every ad, and I think it's just ridiculous. Like, to have a hashtag in a poster or in a TV commercial is just, I can't think, it's like, oh, why don't you just have a QR code inside a phone? You know, it's just so many dumbs.
Well, you're somebody who's been using Twitter since the beginning. How many hashtags have you ever, what do you do with a hashtag even?
Well, I have fun with hashtags, but my hashtags are, you know, art director wisdom and copywriter wisdom and, you know, crappy jokes.
Right.
So then they're funny, but, you know, if my hashtag is going to be, you know, VW Darth Vader dog, that's not going to... Nobody's going to be cracking jokes on that.
Nothing positive, at least, for the brand.
It's just like, what are we going to do? Are we going to say, yes, that was a great ad? No, that was a bad ad.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know that Deutsch is doing a Taco Bell So I'm kind of hoping they're going to bring back that Chihuahua, that really cute dog. No, they're not. I'm not hoping that either. I just thought I'd say that.
If you can't get a laugh with a dog, get out of the business, right?
Right, exactly. Now, there's probably going to be more dogs this Super Bowl. There seems to be a dog trend going on, too.
That was the one thing I'd heard was that the VW's line was that there won't be dogs this year.
Oh, yeah, VW won't do dogs.
They've tapped it up. But so Deutsch will just move it to a different account.
Yes. Yeah, so Deutsch is going to just do the dog for Taco Bell instead, I'm sure. Yeah. They seem to be dog-loving people at that agency.
When you see this tie over to the hashtag, it, to me it sounds a lot like what you're talking about in the case study videos where people just want to say, look, it's shareable. We're extending. Yeah. We're making your 60 seconds worth more.
Yeah, it's like they're checking it off a list. But the hashtags of today are the AOL keyword of the 90s. You're wasting your advertising space on advertising for somebody else because what you're doing is you're advertising Twitter.
Right.
And you put like the $3 million up to go on the Super Bowl. Stop advertising for Twitter. They didn't put that money up. That's your ad.
Yeah.
Your thing. If people love it, they're probably just going to mention your brand name, which is as easily searchable as a hashtag. You know, go figure.
You feel like anybody who ever would suggest a hashtag campaign doesn't really know what they are.
Yeah. And they probably don't use Twitter in the same way.
Which is the same with QR codes. I mean, people think there's some kind of magical encoding method. You know, nobody who suggests you use them knows how to use them.
I know. I've seen a QR code on an email that I was reading on my phone.
Right.
And I was like, why are you doing this?
If you could put your phone's head up its own ass, it could scan that QR code.
It doesn't bend that way. I've tried, man.
I'm not sure what they're for, QR codes. I mean, I think in the, you know, every time a client's ever asked for one, it's like, you know, it might make sense, more sense to you living in Sweden where everybody had Nokia phones with a built-in reader, right? And a T9 keyboard. There was no good way to type in a URL, but that's already over.
Yeah, that's over. Yeah, no, I had a QR code website in Switzerland in 2001. So it's not like I've never touched QR codes. And the entire website structure, it was like a sort of a blogger for Switzerland. A friend of mine was a developer on it, which is how I ended up in a blog system I couldn't even understand the language of. But everybody got their own QR code avatars. So when you were surfing this website on like the pre-smartphone phones, you just clicked the other people's avatars and you ended up on their websites.
Oh, okay.
So it was kind of well thought out. It was meant to, maybe it was like a pre-Twitter sort of thing, because what we were doing is we were doing it on our stupid phones. And we were just leaving short messages to each other. And with our avatars, you could come back and you could see my short message. And with his avatar, you'd bounce and see his message, which was a response to mine. So it was like we were sitting there sort of texting each other over blogs.
Yeah.
You know, looking at it on the web wasn't very interesting, but using it on the phone was kind of fun.
And this was in 2001.
Yeah. So, and since then, when the QR code hype happened in advertising, I was like, where have you guys been? And don't you know how it's supposed to be used? It's not supposed to be printed on a billboard that I'm driving past at 90 miles an hour.
Well, you can see the desire there. I mean, when you see it, it's almost like you can see the desperate brand manager on the other end of it saying, how the heck are we going to turn this? Or maybe the desperate creatives even saying, how can we came up with this great idea for a billboard, but we know it doesn't work anymore. What fairy dust can we sprinkle over this to make it relevant again?
Yeah. I think the problem is it's always wrongly used. I mean, QR codes are basically just URL spellers, and they shouldn't be that. They should be little chunks of information on their own.
We had one of those lost in the pile of ghost ideas, this campaign where we would ask people to put, if they're stuck in traffic, they'd have a QR code they could print out and put on their car, and the traffic helicopter could see it and scan it and, you know, give them some kind of promotion. Where in the sense that the QR code can be so much more than, like you said, just a misspelled URL. It could be used for some kind of cool identification thing or some inventive purpose other than just getting me to your crappy website that I would have rather you just told me the URL anyway. It's never worth the effort. And when I get there, it's just going to be another ad. You know, I know there's not going to be anything worthwhile on the other end of it. You're not giving me any magic to it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, other than not having to type, which I don't hate doing, I text all the time.
Yeah, Exactly. But it's also, I mean, the QR code readers aren't very good, because if they were good and they actually worked by, you know, you swipe past and take a quick picture. Like, I have bar scanners on my phone that are super easy. You just swipe it past, you know, even the most wrinkly package of bread, and it will tell me where I can get this bread cheaper anywhere else in the near vicinity. Like, that's what my QR code reader should be doing, but none of them that I've downloaded ever worked.
Yeah.
And so if they did work, though, you could have QR codes as little, you know, buttons on your shirt and, you know, say who you are. Like, I'm single and I like cheese. I like cheese and beer and going to the movies and long walks on the beach. And, you know, and people could swipe, you know, and see each other and learn about each other really easily. We could do all sorts of funny things. But
yeah, hey, I fancy you. Stand still. Let me scan.
Let me scan.
Let me not talk to you. I'm within
like
talking distance.
No, but what if they could tell each other, like if they alerted each other to the presence? Hey, you guys, ding, 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 ding. This one links up with that one.
Yeah.
That would be an awesome dating party, actually.
No, I think there's an app for that, but it's not for straight people.
I know exactly what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. You mean Grindr, don't
you? I think so, yeah. I think there is a, but that's just a, the thing is, if it was that easy to make a date for everybody, I think there'd be too many people in the world. It'd be too easy to reproduce.
Yeah, already. So obviously that already happened.
Yeah. Have you seen any spots coming up for the Super Bowl that you're excited by?
No, not yet. No, not yet. They're very much embargoed until the last minute. It's usually what happens is that I get a few that are, you know, your normal. They're okay. And they're embargoed and they don't really excite me that much. And then there's a few that they start pushing out that are basically, they're press releasing the hell out of it. So you can see them everywhere before the Super Bowl. And these bore me insanely because it's just, that's unwrapping your Christmas presents. And I hate when they do that. And I just, they're always on the list of stuff I will hate forever.
Yeah.
But they're doing it because, you know, if they get loud enough in the press, they may be discussed next year as the Super Bowl ad. And then when the actual game comes on, there's always an ad there that I wasn't prepared was going to be that good, you know? And that's always the horse, the dark horse. But it's always the one that's, like, completely secretive. They haven't even sent it to me until the hour the game runs, you know?
And those are the best.
Those are the best ones. But I think it also has to do with the fact that I didn't see it a week in advance.
Right, you're not sick of it.
Yeah. I mean, the other ones that are hidden and aren't press released, you know, they could be one of the good ones too. But the ones that are press released everywhere, I'm so sick of those. I'm just like, no, that's wrong.
I think it goes back again to the case study conversation where it's like, it's not just about that 30 seconds anymore. It's about the press. The press release is the ad. And it's almost like the ad is there to make the press release more spreadable.
Yeah.
To get the ink and get the native articles. Yeah.
Yeah, because as far if you look back at all the internet hoaxes, they used to be ads. I mean, there was the bulletproof baby pram. Some woman like puts her baby in a pram, and then she takes out some like really horrendous, you know, semi-automatic gun and starts shooting at the pram, and then she goes and gets her baby out of it. And everybody was like, "Oh my God, is that for real?" And none of them. I mean, it was written up in all the newspapers in Sweden too, and none of them went to the website where this supposed pram was for sale. Except it was sold out. Well, I went to the website, and at the bottom of the website, you see that it was like a promotion for a movie.
Oh.
Like, well, you know, so it's not a news article, or it shouldn't have been a news article about this product that doesn't exist. It should have been, it was just, you know, a promotion for a movie. Oh. Wait.
Fuck.
On my door. Hold on a second. Sorry about that. My really butch mailman got me my mail.
You really butch mailman?
Yeah. Enough to say mail person.
Your mail carrier.
Mail carrier? No, mail carrier. That's not a human. That sounds like a vehicle.
That's the bag that they bring.
That's a little trolley that they sort of scoot around. The one-handled trolley with two wheels.
Well, we're at 45 minutes already. I think that's pretty good for a first one. What do you think?
Yeah.
Okay, RACV car loans start from 8.75%. 8.75%, and that's all. There's nothing else really to say.
Comparison rate of 9.02% calculated on loan amount of $30,000 secured over a term of 5 years based on monthly repayments. This comparison
rate...
Hey,
hang on. What are you doing, mate?
Disclaimer guys, reading the terms and conditions. Don't interrupt, disclaimer guide. This comparison rate is true only for the examples given and may not include all fees and charges. Different terms, fees or other loan amounts might result in a different comparison rate. A comparison rate schedule is available at recv.com.au, subject to RACV lending criteria.
Mate, that's not what the ad's about. Okay?
Disclaimer guide disagrees. Disclaimers are an important legal requirement for credit advertising.
Stop that.
Do you want to take this outside?
What?
Outside. You and me. Right now.
No, I don't want to take it outside. What's wrong with you?
Then don't interrupt, disclaimer guy. I'm serious. Don't even test me. I'll bring the hammer down.
Just finish it quickly, please.
Conditions, fees and charges apply. To apply, call 131560 or visit racv.com.au.
Thank you. RACV car loans from 8.75%. That's really good. Mate, you really ruined the moment there, you know that?
Disclaimer guy holds no responsibility for the ruining of moments or moments ruined therein.